Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Percolate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious. And now, here's Wendy.
I was going to start with another story, but I got distracted by this one. Oh yeah, first. Hi. It's a holiday weekend. Yay. Unfortunately, the weather's great. It's fabulous out there. Coffee. I got distracted by this one. It was... I don't know if you've ever tried this or heard of it, but the hot thing, right? Yeah, hot. Yeah, okay. Literally, coffee served with a lump of burning coal. And it was a big hit in Indonesia. And then I'm looking through this, seeing all the warnings, WebMD, you know, saying, this might not be a good idea. However, it looks pretty cool. The picture where it's all bubbling and it looks like they might have had a little cream or something in it. But you have a little lump, a red hot piece of coal floating on your kopi jos. And apparently, it's been around for a while, like back in the 60s. And somebody decided to help a friend deal with a troubled stomach. That's what the story says, anyway. No comment from the friend. Anyway, so we don't know what the long-term effects were, but apparently, everybody else thought that was really cool, so they decided to share it. All right, anyway, I got distracted by that. I was going to do another story, but we'll just go ahead and put that off because now we're on the food binge. And there's some other stuff out there that's fun and probably not good for your health. Maybe we'll just skip that because I don't want to be accused of contributing to poor health and all of a sudden get in trouble. So let's go to soap. Soap. Pojo's Vampire Repellent Soap. Yes, you can get Vampire Repellent Soap. Pure Vermont, all-natural bath and beauty products. Locally sourced Pure Vermont honey and antibacterial, of course, antifungal properties. And you can get this online. I guess I'll just go to the Fortean blog, the Curious Fortean blog. They actually, since they post a little note about the fact that you could get it, got some to sample and decided that maybe it's pretty good stuff. So anyway, it's soap. Got it? All right. Star Wars, 40 years of good memories. And you probably have that theme song. Yeah, that one. Emblazoned. Man. Memories, good times, the Vader. So all sorts of celebrating. And we find out, bringing us up to date, that yes, there was a big, big plan in the next movie to have Carrie Fisher, Princess Leia, General, was going to be like a major part of this. And so now, what did they say? Well, this is the quote. So General Leia was going to be a significant part of Episode 9. Very significant, yeah. And so that's going to have to be rethought. So they're not saying what's happening, but rethought is the word anyway. So we're hoping that something will give her a boost one way or the other, because it was a fabulous character. And Carrie Fisher, just, you know, no words. Real life Darth Vader. Yeah. This is after the movie. You know, everybody has their way of memorializing it. Well, Darth Vader works at a hospital in Tennessee. And so there you go. He's 39. And most people would say that that would not be a good image to have. However, he said, this is what happened. My mom wanted me to be junior after my father. And dad said, no, Star Wars is going to be good. So he liked Darth, and that was a good bad name, or a bad good name. And so that's what he is, and he's a surgical assistant in Tennessee. And so he's had all sorts of Star Wars convention invitations, and he's not much of a fan. He said he hasn't even seen Star Wars Return of the Jedi, okay? But, hey, he's Darth, so that's not a problem. He can do whatever he wants. I've got a really fun guest coming up, and we're going to talk about psychic spies. But I also wanted to give you hope in case you've got pets who would like to have titles added to their name. This dog has 7 editorial boards that he is listed as the head of. And this is worth it, okay? Atlas Obscura. Apparently, it's pretty easy to do this because the owner of Ollie, who's now quite professionally well-known, he's got 7 medical journals that he has been listed as some kind of a credentialed, very important VIP person on. And he said what he found out was that these people wanted him to be, you know, in some way, shape, or form, they like having all these people listed as authorities. They don't do their due diligence, however, so the fact that he's got 7 is a clue. So if you want to know if a sham journal exists, then go and look up Ollie's credentials. Olivia Dahl. Okay, Olivia Dahl says that these include avian propinquity, hello, and benefits of abdominal massage for medium-sized canines, and that's what the dog is interested in researching. So there you go. Peer-reviewed journals where the dog is on their editorial boards. That's just FYI. So start looking for Olivia Dahl, and you'll find out that Ollie's been busy. Well, at least Ollie's owner has. Mic'd up. All right, my guy, Lance Munguia, is going to be talking about Third Eye Spies. Now, this is a documentary, and it's already done and ready to go. Looking for some people to help fund it and finance it and distribute it, and that's what's coming up. But we're going to talk about these are the guys the CIA trained with psychic abilities, or tested with psychic abilities, both training and tested. Because once the guys got in who knew what they were doing, then they passed that all along to other guys, and just a whole generation of fantastic information that was they sat on for a while and made these guys who are legit, like Uri Geller and Ingo Swann, have to be quiet. And now the truth is coming out, and it'll be fun to see what they've got put together in this film. So stick around for that. It's Wendy's Coffee House on KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. My guest has been working hard on this film, Third Eye Spies. Lance Munguia and Russell Targ and a whole lot of other people making sure this thing comes out. It's about the psychic spies the CIA worked with and the behind the scenes. And there are a few videos on Vimeo. And Lance, I want to find out how far you are with this, how soon, what are we going to be seeing this, you know, soon in the next year? What's going on? And thank you for talking to me.
You're absolutely welcome. Thank you for having me on the show. The film is almost complete. We've actually just started the process of reaching out to some distributors, and everybody seems really, really excited by the trailer and by the film. So I'm hoping that very, very soon, you know, we'll have a distributor locked in and be hopefully out by possibly even the fall or wintertime.
Oh, that's excellent. That's excellent. Yeah. I know, this is something that people that I've talked to quite a few people who are really excited seeing the behind the scenes with this. And I know Russell Targ has to be just chomping at the bit. And
he is. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, he's my constant text message buddy. Where are you at with this? Where are you at with that? And he's still constantly sending me notes and little tidbits and things to include into the film last minute. So, we're working away on it.
Okay, so let's get everybody up to speed, because there are still some people who won't have all the details on this. Basically, Russell Targ and the group that worked as the psychics who were working with the CIA.
Yeah, that's right. I many years ago read a Reader's Digest, of all things, about the Army's top secret psychic spy program, that they were using psychics to spy on the Russians. And so I was vaguely familiar with the whole thing. but didn't really know too much about it. And actually, Russell sought me out because he had seen some of my previous film work, a film that I did called Six String Samurai, which had come out. And he sent me a message through a friend, and we connected. He wound up flying out to L.A. for a long weekend and, you know, talking about the idea of doing a film. And frankly, I didn't know, you know, is this guy for real? I mean, is he schizophrenic? Is he making this stuff up? Because it was so completely unbelievable to me at the time, once he really started getting into the details, the fact that they were looking, using psychics into top-secret Russian, you know, satellite facilities and nuclear facilities and submarines and, you know, things like that, and that they got, like, absolutely picture-perfect descriptions, you know, at one point even getting the names of secret projects that were going on in an NSA listening post, actually by accident, which is what led to the creation of the program. And he was telling me all of these stories, and it took him until about the third day. He finally said, "No, by the way, you know, we had congressional hearings with the House Intelligence Committee, and all of this information was released through Freedom of Information Act." And then I realized, wow, all of this can be verified. But at the same time, when I would talk to him about it, or even some of the other people individually about it, it was nowhere near as powerful as hearing everybody's story together. And you know, it's kind of like if a tree falls in a forest, does it make a sound? You know, it by itself, it was so unbelievable that any one person saying it is just hard to believe. But once you gather, you know, 20, 30 PhDs, you know, who have spent their lives, you know, devoted to studying, you know, parapsychology and you know, psychic research, then the weight of this really starts to hit you, and you start to realize, wow, these are very, very serious people who took this in an incredibly rigorous scientific way. And for the first time in the film, we gathered all those people together. We gathered together the former head of CIA Life Sciences, you know, who was one of the contract monitors on the program. You know, we have a interview with Ken Kress for the first time, who was their CIA physicist in charge of the program from its inception, you know, with CIA. So, and also, you know, Dale Graff, who ran the DIA's, you know, psychic program for about 20 years, and several of the remote viewers themselves who worked on the program. So, and remote viewing being the concept of seeing outside of space and time using only the power of your mind. And you know, it's really kind of psychic ability, but they call it remote viewing. That's kind of the term that was coined by Ingo Swann, who was one of the very first psychics that they studied. You know, the whole thing started back in the, you know, early 70s at Stanford Research Institute, at Stanford University. Ingo Swann was working as a psychic for this little, you know, Stanford program and, you know, guessing cards on tables and things. And he finally got really fed up one day, and he said, "Why are you making me look at cards on the desk?" He says, "If you want to know what's on the card, flip it over and look at it." He says, "I can see anywhere in the world with my psychic abilities. Why don't you give me something interesting to do?" And that's what they did. So they actually, just to humor him, on their coffee breaks, they would send somebody out into Palo Alto, and then basically Ingo would sit there in the room and describe the location that this guy was at. And so they started doing more and more rigorous scientific studies with this, and then the CIA found out about it and basically showed up at Stanford and said, "Hey, we understand you guys are studying psychic ability. If there's something to this, we'll fund you. If you can prove it, and if not, then we'll know that the Soviet Union, who's heavily studying this and funding it, is just faking us out." And of course, they really blew everybody's minds with what they actually came up with.
So, well, the cool thing about Ingo is that now, if you want to find out some of his stuff, all of his papers, he's deceased, all of his papers are on exhibit at the Ingram Library. This is University of West Georgia. So there are some fabulous things there. They also, his family still maintains the site, ingoswan.com. But mm-hmm. I got, when they were still, when this stuff was still available, because he wanted to make a lot of his papers, his information available to the general public to kind of get the word out on the fact that anybody can do this if you basically apply yourself. And you may not be, you know, master's degree caliber, but you might be at least a little bit proficient. And one of the things when he wrote the book Penetration, he still had to kind of cloak some of that because mm-hmm. the CIA stuff hadn't come out. So you have to weed through it, as you have, I'm sure, to figure mm-hmm. out what might be legit and what isn't. But it's a fascinating read.
It really is. And Ingo was just a fascinating, you know, character, you know, through all of this, because he was this very kind of flamboyant personality. But he was also a very serious researcher. You know, he really took all of this very seriously, and you're right in that, you know, he was a professional psychic already when he started the program, but through the now going over 3 years that I've been doing this with Russell Targ, who was one of the two physicists with Hal Puthoff who were originally starting the program at Stanford Research Institute, you know, the thing that became really apparent to them right away was that actually the people who did best at this had never done it before and didn't even consider themselves to be psychic. You know, the statistical best results that they ever got in the program was by somebody named Hella Hammett, who was a Life magazine photographer, kind of very glamorous older lady who was a friend of Russell's, who they brought in as a control subject because they wanted to see what somebody who didn't claim to be a psychic would do. And she wound up getting better results over the years than everybody else. You know, and in fact, years later, she went and worked with the Egyptian government and another researcher by the name of Stephen Schwartz, who's in the film.
Yes.
And they uncovered the lost temple of Alexandria, Egypt, that had been lost, within 12 inches of where it had been buried in the sand for thousands of years. You know, just by her remote viewing talent and by basically saying, you know, dig here.
And that's what's so fantastic about it. The thing, I have actually talked with Stephen Schwartz, and he was the one who designed the graphs to figure out how to put something in a space and how to tell them where to go and where to look. They had to have some kind of a scientific protocol and something mm-hmm. that they could duplicate. And
that's right.
That was a part of his contribution, was being able to put this graph together to figure out, you know, is it, you know, what quadrant is this in?
Well, what they originally started doing, and this was while they were still going doing the research at Stanford, they started basically just looking at geographical coordinates, you know, longitude and latitude. And basically they would just give the subject coordinates of longitude and latitude and say, you know, describe what you see there. And they started getting really good results with this, and this is actually what actually attracted the attention of the CIA. And Kit Green, who was their contract monitor, the CIA agent who basically showed up at the time, said, okay, I'm just going to give you some random coordinates, and you go out and you look at those coordinates and tell me what you see. And if you come back with what is the actual, you know, thing that's there, we'll find you. And they came back with, like, this enormously detailed description of an underground base with missile silos and, very particular kind of rooms that were described, and basically one of the two subjects actually walked around and psychically stuck his head in filing cabinets and then read the names on the tops of the files. And when the researchers got this, they didn't know what any of it meant. They just kind of sent it back over an open channel back to the CIA.
Kit Green
looks at this and says, "This is BS. This is total BS. I gave them the coordinates to my cabin in the woods. This is a complete fantasy." And then he called Russell back. He tells Russell this. Uh-huh. And then Russell says, well, that's interesting that you think it's BS, because we independently gave it to two different psychics, and they both got the same result. And he said, well, that's interesting. And so, you know, he was not too far away from where this cabin was in Virginia, so he drove out there for a weekend. And off in the distance as he's driving, he sees these giant radar dishes not too far away from the cabin, and so he does a little research to find out, you know, who what are those radar dishes, and it turns out it's the most top secret NSA listening post to spy on Soviet satellites at the time, and completely classified area, and he sends the documents that were given to him off to the NSA, and they call him back, and actually they didn't call him back, they showed up at his office.
And
basically were not too happy because they thought the CIA was spying on the NSA.
Uh-huh.
And they said, you know, why? How did you get this information? But the thing that was the most impressive was not the kind of detailed blueprints that they were sent and sort of the descriptions of the base. It was the fact that Pat Price, who was one of the two psychics, with Ingo being the other one, actually got the names of actual projects going on that were current code names, the names of which were classified top secret. You know, they were special access code names that just by knowing the name, you could be prosecuted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that's the thing that spooked the entire U.S. intelligence community. They basically freaked out. And they said, okay, we need to throw money at this. We need to figure out if they're faking us out somewhere, if there's a leak. But if it's real, can we do it to somebody else?
Okay.
And of course, that's what they did.
Hold on, because we're gonna get back into this. But this is legit. This isn't just fiction.
Oh, yeah.
It's fantasy. And that's what I love about it, is finally we're getting some details. Because if they were doing this back then, and we have advanced, because we're looking at 40 years or so, then
right.
There's some phenomenal stuff going on right now because of the people who've learned a thing or two with this first go-round. Okay, so hang on, because we're going to come back. We're going to find out exactly what happened with Pat Price and how the program continued as you went into the deeper levels of working with the CIA on this. Okay, so I'm talking with Lance Mugia and the movie Third Eye Spies coming up sometime this year, hopefully. Cross your fingers. On Wendy's Coffee House, back in a few. Documentary basically legitimizes all the stuff people were saying was completely fiction, fantasy, fabrication about the psychic spies and the CIA. And that's what's so fun about it. It's because, oh my gosh, this is even better than fiction. this is beyond fiction, because it's got details that the folks who write the fiction hadn't even considered. I'm talking with Lance Mugia, and he is part of this whole project, and actually because of his background being a film producer, director, and the Six String Samurai and The Crow, Wicked Prayer, those are the two that have gotten you a name.
As such that it is, yes. Both very fun films to make, and very different than this, by the way. This is my first real foray into doing a documentary film, and this project has actually taken me about 3 years to put together. You know, I between other projects that I'm working on, working with this, but I'm doing most of the editing myself, and conducted all the interviews myself. So, it's been a real labor of love for me. But you talk about how this is stranger than fiction, and actually, you know, if there was a villain of the piece, that's really what it would be, is this concept of sort of scientific and actually religious dogma. You know, this idea that, you know, like things are an absolute and that's the way they are, and if they don't fit within your reality, we don't want to hear about it. And this film and basically the events that we've documented are really reality-busting events. I mean, they are things that really make you have to reevaluate, you know, your sort of view of the world. And, you know, these aren't, like I said before, these aren't coming from, you know, sort of wide-eyed idealists or people wearing turbans or, very esoteric people. You know, these are people who every single one of them at one time or another had to step back and go, okay, you know, am I doing this right? Is there something that I'm missing? Am I being duped? You know, because the things were so incredible, you know, again and again and again, they were just proven right. And you're right that, you know, for the most part, this has been minimized and belittled kind of as a subject for a number of years, because it really was something that was taking place in a vacuum and that couldn't really be talked about. Although a lot of the research is actually public, believe it or not. I mean, the team at Stanford Research Institute, you know, Russell Targ, who's the sort of the main character of the documentary, and his partner Hal, they published things in Nature and in the IEEE, which are both very respected scientific journals, talking about the early experiments. Those experiments were continually, you know, attacked over the years. You know, like people would find ways of saying, well, you know, your judging was off of the experiments or whatever. But then when you really start to understand the classified information, which is what Russell had to fight for probably 20 years to get released, mm-hmm. just recently had, then you understand that, you know, it's not a matter of judging or, you know, could you have maybe been watching something or done a sleight of hand trick or something. Like when you're able to draw a diagram of a Russian crane or a Soviet crane or a Soviet submarine 3,000 miles away that nobody in the intelligence community really knows about, and then later on have it proven to be true via satellite imagery. You know, the U.S. government actually becomes the ultimate judge of what is real or not. And typically, like in the Army program, they typically got about 80% of what they remote viewed correct. You know, they got hits on about 80%. And about 40% of the cases that they were sent were solved. You know, and the cases that the remote viewing team at Fort Meade got again and again and again were cold cases. You know, they were given things when no one else could figure them out. And they would be given tasked with an assignment, and they would look at it day after day after day with a team of probably 12 or maybe even two or three psychics, depending on the year. And the psychics were never made aware of whether they were getting it right or not, but the superiors were looking at it, and then it was being cross-checked with other intelligence. You know, in 1995, the whole program was basically exposed by, believe it or not, Jimmy Carter, of all people.
Yeah.
You know, Jimmy Carter came out and said, he was asked at a speech at Emory University, what's the weirdest thing that you ever saw as president? And he said, well, you know, the weirdest thing I ever saw has got to be that we had lost this Russian Soviet bomber in Zaire, you know, over the Congo. And we really, really wanted it because it was a new type of bomber, and so we really wanted to find out what was inside that bomber. And the KGB really wanted it, too, but nobody could find it because it was in the jungle canopy where it had gone down. And the head of CIA said, well, you know, we have this this woman out in California that's, supposedly a psychic, and, you know, we work with her. Maybe she could tell you what it is. So he said, sure, go ahead, have her look. And he said, all I know is that she came back with coordinates, and the coordinates were correct. We went and looked right there, and there it was.
Yeah.
And he actually detailed that out in his latest book. You know, I think it's called My Life. It just came out a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually went and met him as part of the documentary in Pasadena and got him to sign the book. And you know, and he's told the story many times. You know, and there's a chapter in his book about it.
Yeah.
And so, what happened, though, when that came out in 1995, he didn't realize he was outing a still, at the time, top-secret program.
Mm-hmm.
And so the DIA, who was running the program at the time, freaked out. The CIA freaked out because nobody wanted to be given the Golden Fleece Award, which was the award for the stupidest thing that the U.S. government funds on an annual basis.
Yeah.
And so they basically tossed it around like a hot potato and said, okay, CIA, you're going to take it over, but do an evaluation and see if it ever really worked. And, of course, they commissioned a report. The report came out and said, this was something we played with for a while, but it never actually worked, and so we're therefore canceling everything.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I think it just went under a little bit deeper.
It probably did, because this is the thing, is that at the bottom of all of this, and really the reason that I decided to make the film was not because it's just because it's interesting history or because of some conspiracy theory, but because anybody can do this to a certain extent. You know, every human being has access to intuition. You know, like we always will go left or go right. Like, you know, behind one side is the tiger behind the tree and the other side is the oasis. You know, we all use our intuition. It's an evolutionary thing. And what they found again and again was that anybody could do this, and also it's very cheap to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't take much. It's very easy to hide the type of budget that it would take to do a operational, you know, program. You know, and it just takes a few people. It doesn't take a lot.
Well, the thing about this is, it's still, as much as we're seeing that these things are legit, Russell Targ still gets dissed. I mean, he did a TED talk that they called pseudoscience, and they refused to share it. So he's got it on his webpage, and you can check it out, espresearch.com. He also has his response to Wikipedia, because, you know, they keep monkeying with the bio.
This is, again, sort of the villain of the piece, is that for many, many years, you know, Russell has been kind of this voice in the woods, along with the other people that are sort of actively doing this, saying, hey, guys, this is real. Look at this. This is a very important scientific field that we are studying. And they're constantly downplayed in the mainstream media, in sort of government sources and things like that. It's not hard to do. It's very easy to basically just say, yeah, there's nothing to this, and their protocols weren't good. They didn't do something right. But it's very hard to actually argue with 100 years of data. Like, once you really look at all of the data, you start to see that again and again, you know, these results were replicated, and they're being replicated today. I mean, Daryl Bem, who's in the movie, is at Cornell University, and Professor Emeritus there, and he's had a very successful program there where he's had his results replicated in probably 70 labs around the world. Dean Radin at the Noetics Institute in Petaluma has had stunning successes in many, many you know, psychic experiments and experiments in ESP, and not to mention what's been done in the former Soviet Union.
Although
in the former Soviet Union, it's gone really dark. It's gone really dark. I actually interviewed a scientist from Ukraine that was at a conference, and he said that, you know, he has to use a pseudonym whenever he publishes anything in the realm of parapsychology, which is the field of psychic research, because if he didn't, he would be drummed out of the scientific community. And in fact, they actually have banned and censored several of the books, including Psychics Behind the Iron Curtain, which was the book that set the whole U.S. intelligence community off in the 70s to start researching this. You know, you can't even get it in the Ukraine anymore. You know,
That's what I had heard, that our goal and the impetus was because they were doing something and showing advances. And it's like, well, if they can do it, we can do it.
Yeah. And the thing now, though, is that I don't know, I can't say definitively if the government is doing it or not. You know, I can speculate, but I will say definitively that everybody else but the government is doing it. You know, I mean, it's being used in corporations. It's being used by police departments. It's being used by lawyers. You know, it's being used to find missing people. You know, it's being used. We spent a week actually traveling with a group, led by physicist Marty Rosenblatt. It's called the Applied Precognition Program Project. And he goes to Vegas every so often with a group of gamblers, and they will remote view the winning sports teams about a half an hour before the game, and then go and place bets. And right now, their best group is getting about an 80% hit rate, 80% success when it should be 50-50.
That's impressive. Okay. Yeah. Hang on. We're going to have to. And I know I mentioned, what did Pat find that was the most impressive thing with the CIA? Because he wasn't with them for a long time. But what, of what you have learned, what is it that we really could look forward to in terms of where that next phase is taking us with this, third eye proficiency, maybe I should say?
Well, The next phase.
Okay, wait. We're going to take a break.
Sure. Okay.
That's a tease. It's a tease. Coming back with Lance Munguia about the details behind Third Eye Spies, the documentary in progress. The great thing about this is it's part imagination, because you have to be very good at understanding where you're creating something, as opposed to where you are receiving something. You can project and you can receive. And with the psychic spies, these guys became very adept at finding things. And then not only did they find things, the people who weren't trained or didn't have, any acknowledgement or, professed to be a psychic came back with great results as well. There's a book out there I do want to mention that talks about this program too, the ESP Enigma, the Scientific Case for Psychic Phenomena. And this was a book that came out, I think, before this Freedom of Information Act gave us all the CIA information, the declassified papers. But it talks about some of the people who are involved in this. And you with your experience, you saw some amazing things. So that's why I was asking, what did it show about the potentials for this, where we are going with this PSI abilities, the third eye abilities?
Well, I'll also give Russell a plug in that he has a new book out called Reality of ESP, which does document a lot of the things that we talk about in the film. One of the most interesting things about this is not just the fact that you can spy on people, but what it means to us as human beings. You know, what does psi really say about who we are? And, really, it comes down to empathy. You know, it comes down to understanding that we're connected to each other in a way that is fundamental, and actually that our thoughts affect each other, that is something, that is a sort of a realm of research that they're doing now. This isn't in the film, but I mean, there's things like the fact that you can affect random number generators by projecting mass consciousness on any given subject. Like, they'll follow people, like, say, during a Super Bowl or during 9/11 when there was a terrorist attack, and they'll find that random number generators that supposedly just put out a 50-50 odds numbers will spike in the extreme in one direction during an event of a very concise, focused attention by a large group of people. And so I think really, you know, the direction of where psi research is going now, at least I think in the mainstream, is in how thoughts affect things at a distance. You can actually take a blood cell and put it, you know, somewhere completely away from your body, a mile away, 10,000 miles away, doesn't matter. And what happens to your body is reflected in that cell, even though it's been separated from you. You know, in Russia, Russia is actually even today far beyond, I think, what the United States is doing in this kind of stuff. I mean, they're just doing all kinds of really interesting, very, very kind of what would be considered esoteric, you know, research in things like the fact there's like the DNA phantom effect that like when you enter a room, your presence in that room hangs long after you've left. They can take a piece of DNA, put it in a black box, remove it, and then cast a black light in there and still see that phantom DNA even long after it's gone. You know, so our understanding of what makes up the universe and how our consciousness plays into it is in its infancy. It's like just so tiny in terms of what we really know. But the one definitive thing that psi research says that the mainstream sciences aren't getting is that consciousness is the missing link.
Mm-hmm.
Consciousness is the one thing that we cannot quantify. It doesn't exist in time and space. It exists in some other amorphous way that is outside of time and space. So you could just as easily, a lot of times this happened with remote viewers, with Pat Price as well, he could be looking at a location and he would mark down things as being there. For instance, looking at a swimming pool complex where they were doing a test, he put two water towers and he said, "I think this is a water reclamation plant." But he got the dimensions of the pools within like inches of being correct on the diagram that he drew.
Mm-hmm.
But there were no water towers. It wasn't a reclamation plant. It was just a swimming pool. But many, many years later, Russell just recently got a book on the history of Palo Alto. He's paging through it. He finds the swimming pools. This is years after the experiments are over. And he discovers that many years earlier, 75 years previous, it had been a water reclamation plant, and there were these two large water towers right where Pat had said.
Wow.
This suggests that consciousness is bouncing around all over time and space. And one of the trends now in corporate remote viewing, which is a thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, people like Joe McMonagle,
yeah.
Laurie Williams, who are both in the film, you know, they work for corporations. We'll hire them to actually look at trends and things they should be planning for within the next 10 to 50 years. You know, Joe did this, and he predicted iPhones. He told 20 years ago, he told everybody, get rid of your VHSs, get rid of everything, DVD, doesn't matter. It's all going to be, completely digital. You know, he pegged that long ago in a report given for a corporation.
Yeah.
You know, so these are things that you can use your imagination to focus attention anywhere. You know, and that includes in time as well as space. You know, but then we can get really, down in the weeds with it and say, you know, with quantum theory and with multiple reality theory, you know, which future are you looking at? You know, there just because you predict something in the future, it doesn't mean that there's only one potential future. There are many, you know, and if you ask me, and this is just my own esoteric sort of interpretation of the research and kind of what I know, I think your consciousness puts you where you're aligned to in the future that you're aligned to. So, if you look back at like prophecies by Nostradamus, by Edgar Cayce, by Madame Blavatsky, I mean, any of these like very like kind of older psychics.
Yeah.
A lot of the things they talked about came true, but they didn't come true to the dimensions that they said. It was almost like they were looking at the worst case possible scenario, and that we as a collective society brought the needle back a little bit, and it wasn't quite as dramatic. You know, like, for instance, Cayce predicted that Japan, that this particular part of the Japan was going to fall into the ocean, 2 million people were probably going to die, you know, there was a huge tsunami, and of course, there was a huge tsunami, and part of that part of Japan did fall in, right.
Fukushima,
but,
yeah.
But instead of 2 million, it was 25,000 people killed.
That was an improvement.
Yeah, so it suggests that, you know, we are not completely victims of our own psychic ability. You know, like there is no such thing as an ultimate outcome. But can you imagine, though, a society where this is actually seen as mainstream? Can you imagine suing somebody because they're thinking bad thoughts about you, or because they took a voodoo doll and they tried to poke pins in it and hurt you?
Let's not encourage people, Lance.
Seriously?
let's not give them ideas. quit it. Okay, we got to get out of here. So I want to, again, give the plug for the film. You're looking for distribution and support?
Yeah, that's right. We've just started now the process of starting to contact some distributors, and yes, we are looking for distribution. You know, you can go to thirdeyespies.com right now. We have a Facebook page. Those are both great ways to sign on and you know, follow what's going on with the film. You know, there are trailers and teasers. Eventually, we're going to have a whole bunch of bonus material up on thirdeyespies.com once we do find a distributor. So.
Okay. Hey, thank you. I appreciate your time, and I'm looking forward to this. We'll check back in again, because I think this is some phenomenal stuff that you guys are exposing and getting into. So,
thank you. Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you for having me.
If you're listening, remember, this stuff is happening right now. It's current. It's legit. It's real. We're not making it up. Third Eye Spies is the film coming to you. So just remember, if you're trying to hide something from a psychic, the more you try to hide it, the more it shines. So get
That's
real.
Absolutely right.
Okay. Thank you, Lance.
Okay, thank you.
Till next time, stay curious. Wendy's Coffee House. See ya.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.